Good morning, everyone. This is a topic that many of us find fascinating. You wouldn't be here if you didn't. My retirement job is teaching astronomy at a local community college in Michigan. That only hyped my interest in the topic. This is, just to get us some perspective, this is a picture of a tiny little piece of the sky with the Hubble telescope, where one finds more than 10,000 galaxies, not just stars, whole galaxies. So there's a lot of places out there where one might wonder whether there are intelligent beings. From a Christian perspective, it's not just, are there extraterrestrial intelligent beings? I will often call them aliens here for brevity. But do they have, if they're there, do we imagine they would have a soul or a spirit or just be intelligent animals? And if they're there, would the sacrificial death of Jesus on earth provide for their salvation? These are just a few of the interesting and rather challenging theological questions that get raised by this topic. Do we have to be afraid? What would we do? What would we think? How would we handle it theologically if we discovered aliens? So, there are three parts to my talk. I'm used to giving hour-long presentations on the science. I'm going to cut that way down. The history of Christian views on this topic is something I'm going to very briefly touch on for lack of time, but I'll give you some resources. And the thing that is really new for me in this presentation is what does the Bible have to say possibly about this topic? What do we think? What is the theology that would go with these verses? So the theological stuff I'm going to talk about, I wish to emphasize, is what I call contingent theology. It is what-if theology. If we were to discover aliens, how would we handle it theologically? I'm not saying there is intelligent life, but if we found it. So, very briefly on the science, and I realize there's another presentation right after this one, which I have the impression will put more emphasis on the science. But the big picture, thousands of exoplanets have been discovered in nearby parts of our galaxy, and more are being discovered rapidly. Extrapolating from this small sample, it's clear now that billions of exoplanets must exist in our galaxy. At least thousands, probably millions or more, of those planets are currently perhaps habitable. 20 years ago, this was optimistic speculation. Things have changed a lot. I note that it is not as necessary but not sufficient for a planet to be currently habitable. If life, advanced life, takes billions of years to form, then one needs environmental stability or habitability on such a planet for there to be intelligent aliens. This is so whether one has, for example, a progressive creation model or some kind of theistic evolution model in mind, you need stability for a long period of time. So what do we know based on the origin of life on Earth? Primitive life formed on Earth, some say within around 100 million years of when Earth became habitable. Others say it was a few times longer than that. Nevertheless, for most of the Earth's history, it had life on it. Many therefore assume that life would also spontaneously form on habitable exoplanets through natural processes. The origin of species via evolution has increasingly mature scientific backing, although I'm well aware some people here do not accept that. However, even if the evolution of species has some scientific backing, no one at this point knows the origin of life on our planet. This is a schematic diagram that I put together. The logarithm of biological complexity here, and you have this enormous step in complexity at the origin of life. And then the model is very, very slow over billions of years, you know, trillions of mutations, some small fraction of which were improvements. But you've got this anomalous starting point. A lot of people have been working a long time now trying to understand that, trying to break it down into some kind of steps. But that's basically an unknown at this point. How did life get started here? So, since roughly 1960, a radio astronomer named Frank Drake started looking for radio signals from aliens. And there have been a number of 10-year predictions. We will find signals within 10 years. Carl Sagan, I know two people who sat in this classroom back in 1973 and heard him say this. Frank Drake said it in 1998. No signals have been found. I think if I was in the business of looking for such signals, I would probably give 10-year predictions too. If you make a 5-year prediction, you pump up expectations too much, and people will remember what you said too well. If you give a 100-year prediction, you know, yawn, you know, not in my time. So 10 years is about right. It's a nice round number. I'm not saying these people are dishonest. I'm just saying, you know, that was their wild guess with some, I'll call it politics, perhaps mixed in. It's rather surprising that the search for radio signals is extremely limited in the kind of distance that one could detect signals if they were coming from an exoplanet radiating signals similar to what we on Earth radiate. It's extremely limited. The distance on which our normal radio and TV signals could be detected using our best equipment would be less than 1 light year. I mean, the nearest planet other than the sun is 4 light years away, okay? The number of planets accessible goes as the cube of the distance, right? The volume of a cube of radius r. But at best, our capability is for a few thousand stars that are within 100 light years. And that's under absolutely, outstandingly optimistic conditions. So we're almost blind. People are looking for laser beams and things like that too. But the new way of looking for things is to not look for signals from intelligent beings, but to look for indications of primitive life which would influence the atmospheres of exoplanets. One looks for gases like oxygen, methane, ammonia, as the products of primitive life. Sarah Seeger, who's pushing this at MIT, predicts detection in 10 years. Now, she has a little bit of justification. There's some big telescopes that are being built that will help with this study. A problem is that for planets with reducing hydrogen-rich atmospheres, methane and ammonia are copiously produced by non-living processes. But if one finds oxygen at 10, 20, 30% kind of concentrations, that's a nearly foolproof signature for life. And this shows one of the three big 30 to 40 meter telescopes that are going to be built over the next several years. This one on Mount Mauna Kea in Hawaii. And I have two slides on Christian, the history of Christian attitudes, just for lack of time. Attitudes have changed back and forth from very positive to very negative. The theological issues involved, the biblical issues, have not been resolved, to my knowledge, although they've been discussed and people worry about those kind of issues. This is as far as I'm going to go on the topic of the history of Christian views. Here's a book you can pick up inexpensively from Amazon, The Extraterrestrial Life Debate, Antiquity to 1915, by Michael Crowe. Quite an excellent book with articles showing you the diversity of views there have been with time. And there have been some creative articles by books by C.S. Lewis. On to the part of this presentation that I think is, at least for me, the newest. I started looking in the scriptures for, you know, just a fresh look at the scriptures for what there might be on this topic. John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have eternal life. The issue is, the word world in the Greek text is kosmon. Kosmon is a word that, if it's used as the subject of a sentence in the nominative case, for those that are into this, is cosmos. And the word cosmos can mean the world, or it can mean the cosmos. So, what was the original understanding of the meaning of this verse? What was the world of Jewish believers? I don't think it was our planet. It was the Jewish world. Judea and the diaspora of Jews who were spread around the world was what I think they understood by the term. The Holy Spirit then very forcefully forced them to expand their idea of the world that God loved to include Gentiles, Acts chapter 10. It is therefore conceivable to me that that world, that cosmos, could be further expanded in our understanding of what it means in the future if we discover aliens. In which case, the implication, and I realize you can get into some circular thinking here, but the implication would be that the whoever believes in him could include aliens. If God so loved the cosmos that he gave his one and only son. So, if this is the case, then the sacrificial death of Jesus on earth applies to them. Now maybe, I mean, I'm pulling a lot out of one verse, right? One of the issues Christians historically have thought about is, would the Lord need to separately provide for salvation on each planet where there are aliens? John 3:16 could be interpreted to mean this was a unique place. In any event, if salvation is offered, is on the table for them, this could be taken to imply that they have a spiritual nature. They're not just intelligent animals. What else might there be in Scripture on this that would pertain, that would inform us on this topic? In Mark 13, Jesus said, "At that time, people will see the Son of Man coming in clouds with great power and glory, and he will send his angels and gather his elect from the four winds, from the ends of the earth to the ends of the heavens." A lot of commentators think that this is an example of Jesus using hyperbole, which he often did in his teaching, overstating something to make it catchy and memorable. But if we take this as a possible reference to aliens, it suggests that they could be considered, some of them at least, elect. But there is an ambiguity here. When it says from the ends of the earth they would be gathered to the ends of the heavens, does that mean they're being gathered from the earth and the heavens? Or does it mean talking just about people being gathered from the earth and taken to the heavens? Okay? But that ambiguity is resolved in a parallel passage from Matthew 24. "And," Jesus said, "he will send his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they," the angels, "will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of the heavens to the other." You could say this is hyperbole, but if we find aliens, I personally am going to say, and I don't think I will be alone, this is talking about them as well as us. One could take this to mean aliens exist, have a spiritual nature, and can be saved. You could interpret it that way if you get rather literal about it. There are other verses, such as John 10:16, "I have other sheep, not of the sheep pen." You know, and you can go through the same sequence of possible meanings. The original meaning, I think the Jewish believers had, was it was just Jews. And maybe the other sheep were the diaspora Jews, right? Not just the Jews in Judea. Then the meaning was expanded to Gentiles and perhaps in the future to aliens. If you say this is not hyperbole and literal, then the Greek, then the question is, what does the word cosmos mean in John 3:16? The Greek, ancient Greek idea of the cosmos was geocentric. The earth was at the center of the universe, right? I don't think we have to be that literal. I doubt that many, if any of us, are that literal when we look at Joshua chapter 10. Joshua's idea of the cosmos was geocentric too. Everybody's was, right? He told the sun to stop moving, not the earth to stop rotating. We reinterpret that with our modern knowledge of science to say, to not be limited by Joshua's ideas about cosmology, right? I'm not trying to be that literal. So if there are aliens out there, how would they, and if Jesus is the story for them too, how would they hear the message? If Jesus died once on earth for all, let me look at the time here, then spreading the gospel message conventionally using science is limited by vast interstellar distances and by the speed of light. Even if we establish communications with aliens on a nearby exoplanet, say 50 light years away, so it takes 50 years each way, right? What about those aliens, potentially brothers and sisters, or whatever their genders might be, who live on the other side of our galaxy, 50,000 light years away, or who live in Andromeda, 2.5 million light years away, or farther? How would we possibly communicate the message with them? This is where things get even more speculative, okay? But I'm not shying away from speculative theology here. Daniel wrote, "Gabriel came to me in swift flight." And we can again look at Matthew 24, and he will send his angels, and they will gather the elect from one end of the heavens to the other. How long would that take? I mean, the heavens keep expanding, right? How would they even catch up with the ends of the heavens if they're limited to the speed of light, right? So I'm suggesting, and this is, you know, a suggestion, that angels may have, 1 minute, that angels may have the capability for faster than light travel through spiritual dimensions to carry messages and to gather the elect. I'm going to skip over some other speculation. Not all of us may be literally, physically descended from Adam and Eve. That's been talked about in previous years here. So, just as you do not know, Ecclesiastes 11, how the spirit comes to the bones in the mother's womb, so you do not know the work of God who makes everything. God may freshly breathe spirit into each person. We are, I would suggest, the spiritual children of Adam, of Abraham, and of God. Well, maybe Hugh Ross and others are correct that our place in the universe is so special that we are the only intelligent life forms. That may be. But if it turns out to be wrong, we have a Bible and a potential theology that can handle it. Thank you.
We do have another talk coming up on the same topic of extraterrestrial intelligence, but why don't we take just a few minutes right now for any questions, and then after that, after the second talk, we can have questions addressed to both speakers. All right. Dominic.
Yeah, when I talk about the general revelation with my students, I like to remind them that this is something we have, believers and non-believers have in common. We need to remember that commonality with non-believers, that they know about the general revelation. But this is also something we have in common with aliens, if there are aliens out there, right? According to Romans 1:20.
Right.
They should know something of the Creator through an understanding of what has been made, because they experience the same natural laws, the same universe, presumably, that we do on Earth. So I think this is an important commonality to remember that we have with aliens. Would you agree?
Yes. Yes, I would agree. I don't know how they would figure out the salvation plan from general revelation, but yes, I agree. They would know some things of God.
If we make
contact with aliens, how would we keep our species from subjugating them? Simple. You can't get there from here. I mean, you're talking millions of years, at least with known space travel technology, or travel in either direction. So I'm not terribly worried about that.
We have time for maybe one or two quick questions.
So the limit that you mentioned, that we can only see out 1 to 100 light years, is that assuming that we just pick up the radio signals that aliens would be using on their own planet, or would that be assuming that they're actually trying to send signals to us?
If you just looked at their equivalent of radio and television signals, we could not even detect them one light year away. It's on the SETI website that says that. If you look at high power, especially military radars that put out these very powerful pulses, that gets you up to a few tens of light years. If you do a targeted broadcast from a huge antenna like Arecibo, where you can transmit, therefore, a much narrower, more highly directed beam, that gets you out to maybe 100 or so light years. But that means they better be aiming directly at us, or we're not going to see it. Right? So that's my answer to your question. And I get it basically from the SETI website.
The last quick question. This is not a question. It seems to me that if we have God as big as I think God is, we don't need to worry about this one. I've always found that John's mention, Jesus says, I have sheep, other sheep, not of this fold, and I have to go see them too. So I'll leave it up to God.
Okay.
Okay, let's thank our speaker.